Hi, this is Amanda. You may know me as Cat Content Only on Twitter. I have a new podcast. It's called Radio Free Amanda, and you're about to listen to a 20-minute preview of a recent episode I did on the history of Afghanistan with guest Justin Podor. And if you like the preview, I'd be really grateful if you subscribe to the podcast. And you can do that at patreon.com/radiofreeamanda. So hope you enjoy the preview. Bye.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm Justin Podor. I'm a professor at York University. And I guess my podcast is the Anti-Empire Project. We're part of the, what are they calling it? The East is a Podcast Extended Universe?
Yeah.
So I guess we're part of the East is a Podcast Extended Universe. And I went to Afghanistan in 2013. I was doing a sabbatical at a university in Delhi, Jamia Millia Islamia in New Delhi. And I was with my spouse, and she's Afghan. She's born in Afghanistan, and we were so close. And so her family in Kabul was like, "You gotta come." So we went to the consulate in Delhi, and the guy at the consulate was like, "Okay, I have a few questions for you. Are you sure you want to go to Afghanistan?" Mm-hmm. "Okay, are you sure you want to go though?" It was basically, that was the question over and over again.
Well, your research interests are really prolific, because, you know, I follow you on Twitter and I follow your podcast, and you research Afghanistan, you wrote a book on Haiti, right? And you just released a book on Palestine. So, you know, how did you end up, you know, studying all these different areas of the world?
It's funny, because I have this buddy of mine who, like, 8 or 9 years ago was making fun of me. He's like, "Okay, so you've got a book on Haiti, you've got a book on the Democratic Republic of Congo, you've written a chapter on Afghanistan, you've got a book on Palestine. So what, are you working your way from the bottom of the Human Development Index and trying to just go up from there or something? What's your plan?" But, you know, yeah, I think there's like a set of countries in the world that have been so devastated by imperialism that it's like there's this special tier where, you know, every country is some kind of neo-colony. They all kind of have to pay colonial tribute. Even China, there's been like that monthly review special edition where I think there was an essay in there where they were arguing like China still is exporting a significant amount of its value, you know, in terms of like labor theory of value. They're exchanging more labor for less labor to the global north, and that's China. So then you think of like Haiti or Afghanistan or the DRC, where it's like more or less some form of occupation, like direct rule, like direct military occupation, Palestine. And then there's also all of these neo-colonial mechanisms, but then there's a whole bunch of other specific mechanisms that happen under occupation where they just like will go and rob banks, right? Like the Israelis will just go and rob Palestinian banks, or, you know, in Afghanistan, there's like all these laundering mechanisms where there's, you know, aid money, like this whole $2 trillion thing. Like, we spent $2 trillion in Afghanistan. Like, you didn't really spend it in Afghanistan. You just were funneling money to weapons contractors, right? So it's just, I don't know. I guess I find that when I study these countries, it's like you get a sense of, it's the clearest for me. It's like the clearest way to understand imperialism is to look at those countries. And it's like, there's this whole, the other thing that I really can't stand is the idea that like these countries are like basket cases, and like nobody's interested in them, and like, you know, why are we even doing this? Because like nobody cares about these backwaters. And it's like you add up these backwaters And like you got the whole world kind of thing. It's like, oh yeah, Afghanistan. It's like in the middle of the Asian continent. Like imperialists don't care about the controlling the mid geographic center of the Asian continent. No, why would they do? Why would they care about that, right? Or like Congo, right? Like look at where the DRC is on a map. And like, yeah, no imperialists wouldn't care about controlling that territory, right? I mean, it's yeah. Anyway, so I can make myself upset, but that's basically. I think that's why I keep going back to these kind of conflicts and these areas, because I do see a lot of commonalities. But then there's also like, you kind of have to immerse yourself and like learn a place on its own terms and get to know people and the debates there. And so I'm kind of like obsessed with a number of places. And then there's things that come up now that I don't know anything about. Like, I don't know anything about that. Like, I don't understand the Ethiopia conflict. Like, I have not studied it. And I'm like, it took me like however many years to understand what's going on in DRC. I don't want to jump in. So I guess, I don't know. Afghanistan is definitely one of those because of family connections and because of analytical interest and because of, like I do know India. My background's from India. I've been to Pakistan. I taught in one summer in Islamabad in 2008, and so I have some connections in the region too. So I do think of Afghanistan as one of my obsessions, and it's never gonna go away.
Yeah, so I'm really glad you came on because I'm of the 9/11 generation, so I'm not old enough to remember US involvement in the 80s. So Afghanistan, for me, a lot of my generation, it's inextricably tied to the events of 9/11 and US occupation. But I think the history of Afghanistan, at least in the US, is very much filtered through, US invasion in the 80s and Soviet Union's collapse. So I kind of wanted to have an episode where an expert comes on and, you talk about the history of Afghanistan and what led to this point, but not necessarily from the US perspective that we're accustomed to, right? So one of these things that is often Afghanistan is often referred to as the graveyard of empires, right? First the British, it's become a meme at this point. First the British, the Soviets, and then the Americans, right? And then next is supposedly China. So this term was coined by 19th century British imperialists, and I was hoping you could maybe start with like maybe British involvement in Afghanistan and sort of give us a historical overview from that. But first, before we dive into that history, what is it about Afghanistan in the first place or its geostrategic location that makes it a site of such vital importance? Why were all these so-called empires interested in Afghanistan in the first place?
Carl Zah, who I think has been on your show, he's been I've been on his show. He's another part of our little universe, right? But he's talked about the British Empire. I think it was on my show that he was like, the British were like Gollum, and like India was like the ring for them. It was like their precious. Like they just everything they did was for India in the 19th century. And for them, Afghanistan was like a buffer zone. So for them, it was like, okay, we have India, but there's a Persian Empire here. There are local powers. There's like a Sikh Empire that they only managed to get rid of in 1849. There were Marathas that they were fighting. So they were fighting a series of wars to finally get control. And then they only really consolidated their control over India 100 years after they started. So they started in, well, I mean, they got there 1700 or something, but they took over revenue control in 1757 after this battle at Plassey. And then from 1757 to 1857, it was just a series of wars and takeovers. And in that period, they were really obsessed with what could threaten our long-term control of this Indian empire that we have, that is basically driving in the Industrial Revolution. It's like bringing unbelievable wealth to Britain, and to a degree that they can then start to recycle it, to a degree that they then take the opium, of course, and in 1839 go and impose that opium on China. So they start a whole other kind of engine where they're taking tea from China and selling opium there. And that's another kind of one of their engines of accumulation. And then they use that power to get into China to break down China's industrial system, but also their agricultural system, and create like a commodified global grain economy. So they're just doing world domination with India as the linchpin of their whole project. And the soldiers that are fighting these wars for them in Asia are Indian soldiers. So it's manpower, it's wealth, it's, you know, the development of these engines, the dismantling of the local networks of trade and commerce and industry. And Afghanistan is not, you know, is independent. It's an independent power. It's been independent since 1747. So like, you know, and before that, it was part of the Persian Empire. And the Persian Empire was in, so quote unquote, decline for a long time. But, you know, there's always, we can judge that now, or you could judge it at the end of the 19th century. But in the middle of the 19th century, who knows, right? What could happen? The possibility that some of these powers, Asian powers, could combine into an alliance was an obsession of the British. So they wanted to create this buffer zone. And, you know, they talk a lot about how they were worried that Russia was going to come and take India from them. I don't buy it. And other Afghan, you know, other, I say other Afghan, but like Afghan historians like Farooq Hussein has been very dismissive of that idea. Arguing that it was really about local Muslim powers and empires, and the fear of those powers combining to be able to throw the British out. So for the British, it was that. And again, like if you think about a map, like even going back before then, Afghanistan is this, you know, it's right in the middle, right? It's the mm-hmm. real bridge between South Asia, East Asia, Central Asia, and then, you know, points west, right? Persia, which is this huge, another huge, important part of the continent. And the order, you can see now, like the order that they're trying to build through the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, you know, where China, Russia, Iran now has joined, Pakistan, the Central Asian Republics. They're trying to do something now that there's no big, imperial foothold anywhere there now.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, with Afghanistan becoming independent. So you can see, like, in all of these cases, going back at least to that time, the 19th century, Afghanistan's been important. And it goes back before that because it's on the Silk Road. And it's just, you know, and if you go back even before that, there's this author named Frederick Starr who wrote a book called Lost Enlightenment about like Central Asian science and culture and technology in like medieval times, in like 800 to 1100, and like the circumference of the earth, you know, the distance to the moon, mm-hmm. you know, all these things were first figured out in Central Asia, like what's now Afghanistan or Uzbekistan, people like Al-Khwarizmi, Al-Biruni. So it's always been like super important. I mean, I also don't believe that any place is unimportant. So I don't really, like, just because they have these geopolitical fantasies, it doesn't mean that there are actually places that are unimportant or important. But like, if you want to talk about perception or the reasoning that they have, it's definitely important.
Mm-hmm.
So now, why?
So
how can we bring it back?
Let's go back to British involvement in Afghanistan.
Yes, right.
They were wanting to get involved to protect their Indian colony, right?
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit more about that involvement, like the wars that they fought?
So what they're doing in this period, in the, you know, like I said, from 1757 on up until 1857, what they're doing is they're basically like making alliances with one or two kingdoms to take down others. So they had their sights on the Sikh Empire and then the Afghan Empire, which was called the Durrani Empire at the time. But like the Afghans, they were interested in that. And so it was like who they were going to take down first. And ultimately, they took down Afghanistan first, and then they took the Sikhs down right after. But like, there was this the plan in Afghanistan was, and it was a pattern that they repeated over and over, was to install somebody on the throne, get the rights to collect revenue from them. Like they become the tax collector. The British become the tax collector for this Asian monarch. And then they run the army and they run the bureaucracy, and then they pay a pension to the monarch. So that was what they wanted to do. They found this Shah Shuja, who had been an exile. He had a cause. He was a candidate for the throne and he was in exile. And I think he was in exile in the Sikh kingdom with Ranjit Singh, and he was not very happy there. So the British kind of offered to put him on the throne, and the person they were deposing was Dost Muhammad Khan. So Dost Muhammad had quite a degree of support in Afghanistan from the nobles. So when the British invaded, there was a lot of resistance in 1839. So this is 1839. This is the same year as the Opium War with China. Mm-hmm. So it's like the imperial like ambition. I don't know what the word is. The gall, like the arrogance. I don't know, but like the fact that they were like invading Afghanistan and fighting this opium war with China at the same time it's really something. But in any case, they go, they invade, and they commit, you know, they commit a whole host of atrocities invading Afghanistan. They occupy Kabul, and this is where, like, I have this theory that, you know, some of the practice that's called purda in Pakistan, northwestern India, and like Afghanistan, where like women are like covered, like they're supposed to be covered at all times, and like, you know, kept in the home and like physically covered. I think it goes, I have this theory just from what I've read, like I don't think it's been systematically put out there, but like that it goes back to this period, because the sexual exploitation of Afghan women at this time by the British was like really open and really explicit. Mm-hmm. And like, mm-hmm. they were, you know, if a British soldier liked someone's, you know, some woman, including like if the woman was married to one of their Afghan allies, they would just go and like kidnap her.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all various incidents of like, including like noble women or like famous women from, you know, big families, and some like British guy would be like, yeah, I'm taking her. Mm-hmm. And he'd just take her wherever, back to India or whatever it was. So I think that was like, I don't know, I could imagine a big cultural reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some you need some explanation for the extreme of what is happening, and it made a lot of sense to me, because there was just like, there were characters like Mohanlal, this Indian agent of the British, and there was another who was from Kashmir actually, and there was this guy Alexander Burns. If you look up Alexander Burns, you know, the guy was running like a party house, you know, mm-hmm. in the middle of Kabul, and you know, they killed him eventually. I don't mean to laugh, you know, but the story of his death is also like, it's like a tragicomic kind of story, because all these people that had been kind of working with him like showed them the way to his place and where everything was hidden and all that stuff. So he was not as popular as he thought he was, and that was the whole British situation. So they got themselves in there by kind of making these alliances with these different Afghan nobles, but then they alienated them, because they just, you know, this was also a period of the 18th and 19th century where they're getting more and more racially arrogant and more into like different forms of like scientific racism and their Victorian morality. And it's weird reading William Dalrymple too, because like Dalrymple has this, it's clear that he has this kind of nostalgia for like the time when British men could just go and have these incredible adventures, in the Orient, and then, the Victorian religion, and then their stupid wives started coming and like just ruined it for everybody, right? Like, but in any case, 1842, they are like the Afghans, like all their allies kind of join up, all the British allies rise up with the British enemies and just kind of unite to kick the British out.